Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're having a lot of fun doing these individual expectations shows. And so we're going to do two players here tonight. The two players are James Prochet and Travis Jones, who obviously play the same position. Obviously, I'm kidding. They are very disparate positions, wide receiver and a defensive lineman. But the idea here is we're going to let our guest analyst, who is Jim Zipcode. How you doing, Jim?
Hi, Ken.
Join us. And he is one of many who has had a chance to opine on the wide receiver group and the defensive line in terms of how these groups may fit together. And this is a better way, I think, to do it than just having the position group shows go to one analyst, which we will do in the end. And we'll pick somebody for those who's good. But it's also very nice to find out what people think about some individual players that they like and what opportunities there are for growth, both in their own personal play and also how they might be used. And so we'll talk about those things and then finish up with what's a good and a great season from each of our perspectives. So first of all,
if we're going to talk about James Prochet, I really don't think he does a good job of holding up at the point of attack when he's playing the nose. So that's definitely an area where he could improve.
Yeah, there you go. Jim, always great to have you on. First of all, let's talk about where people can find you on Twitter.
So I'm at @Zip_Jim on Twitter. And I love to, there's so many great Ravens fans on Twitter. It's really a great environment. And then I'm also on the RSR forums. I had checked out in a little bit of grief over the way the season ended, but I've come back, I guess, in the last couple of weeks.
All right. Fair enough. And you've already been on a couple shows. Appreciate you being part of the recovery process, Jim, because I really respect your opinion. It's fun to talk football with you.
Oh, it's always great to be here.
Well, let's talk first about James Prochet here as we go through this. Prochet had a very fine year in limited targets this last year. He caught 16 out of 20 balls, over 10 yards a target. Those are top numbers, and especially considering the fact that, Tyler Huntley was in there at the end of the year and all yards per targets were greatly reduced during the Huntley administration. You had a guy with a pretty darn good season who, by the Ravens non-draft and non-move to date, I think we'd have to project a bigger role for.
I agree completely. And so I think if we look at what he has done in the past, I think you're talking about a player who mostly operates out of the slot and is really kind of a chain moving sort of guy. But in Greg Roman's offense, they sometimes use the slot to go deep and have the outside guys cut in. Prochet's first reception on the year, in fact, went for 29 yards. So they're not above kind of using him in a deceptive role where they sort of send him deep because of a matchup or a deceptive play design. But I think most of the time I sort of think of him as a smaller Dennis Pitta, like a very reliable, smart route runner who can make the key catch for you.
Yeah, I want to see that. And there's one specific thing in terms of being a route runner. I want to see one specific thing out of him. I want to see him be able to get separation at the top of the route, show some wiggle, show some ability to make that opposing defender make the wrong first step as he makes his move and develop separation that way. Prochet is not a speed guy.
No,
he's not a guy who's going to get separation with speed. So he has to have something at the top of the route that throws off that coverage. You can only run so many slants. Of course, he could be good at those. He certainly has the hands for it. And he's a guy who presents a decent target, bigger. He really plays as a bigger target, I think, than his size is out of the slot.
Yeah, I agree. He's one of those guys. He's like a vacuum cleaner, right? He just hoovers up everything that comes near him. And I think he's one of those guys. He was a contested cast catch guy in college. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's often people go both ways on the contested catch things for a wide receiver prospect. On the one hand, that's great to see, hand strength, tracking, all of that stuff, toughness at the catch point. On the other hand, if he's making a lot of contested catches, it's because he's not getting separation. So maybe he's too slow to play in the NFL. And I have to say that was my original take on Prochet coming out of college, that he wasn't going to be athletic enough for the position. But I think his precision has really kind of let him play.
Yeah, I hope there's more of that, because we really have not seen a ton of Prochet getting to the top of the route and using that wiggle yet. I mean, he's run a lot of slants in this offense. He runs some other things out of the slot, some shorter out and crossing that the Ravens don't really use all that much of it, but a lot of it Prochet is some of it. Sometimes he's on the offside as a receiver, and I think he has shown some positive things in being able to develop a connection with Jackson, which would make him a guy that Jackson looks for on extended play. Absolutely critical in this offense, by the
way. Right. Yeah, because Lamar makes a lot of throws after 4 and 5 seconds where he's been flushed out of the pocket or he's keeping a play alive. Mm-hmm. And Prochet has really, to me, shown the kind of intelligence on the field, you know, the natural kind of reading the defense ability to find the soft spot, to know when his quarterback's in trouble. I can't be on a podcast without bringing up my boy, Miles Boykin. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting contrast, right, where Boykin wasn't always, you know, reading the field the way the quarterback was. I think Mark Andrews shows the ability to read the field the way Lamar
like
does.
Like nobody,
right? He's they're telepathic. And Prochet shows flashes of that same kind of spatial awareness.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because in his first year, I think it might have been all three, but it was at least two of the Boykin touchdowns as a rookie were these kind of extended plays. So mm-hmm. one against Miami in the back of the end zone, yep. where I think Lamar saw back and an opportunity to throw, and Boykin found the football. And then the one, again, I think it was against the Jets, where he made space on the right side of the end zone. Yep. I'm trying to remember what his third touchdown was in that rookie year, but it seemed to me that like maybe all three of them were that. I love Miles Boykin. I'm really sad that he's not with the team. I understand why they wouldn't have wanted to pay the $2.5 million to keep him around, but you know, it's still sad to part ways with him, and a guy who could keep his feet blocking like nobody in the run game. It was really made a significant contribution to the Ravens in that manner.
It's interesting because so he's on the Steelers roster, right? And they drafted two quarterbacks. It's easy to imagine that Boykin will find himself on the street again at some point this fall or this summer.
What do you think of the chances that the Ravens would go back to Boykin and look to get him again?
Ordinarily, I would say low, but I would have to say those percentages jumped up a little bit when they traded away Marquise Brown. Mm-hmm. I think that... I really don't want to spend too much of your podcast talking about Miles Boykin, but from the way Lamar refused to look for him in 2020, even in situations where he was wide open or when he was the hot guy in the face of a blitz, it's like Boykin tried to steal Lamar's girl or something.
Okay.
The relationship does not seem to be there. And so that's not worth taking, you know, a roster spot in a competitive environment where you're trying to look at a lot of undrafted free agents in camp, or whether it's, you know, in season. I would say maybe an injury to a wide receiver and a key special teams performer, and Boykin's on the street and it's October. Yeah, maybe.
And he's a vet min guy at that point. I mean, he's not going to command any more than that. So that is a positive thing. In fact, I guess he's not even technically a vet min guy. He'd be a fourth year guy. So I'm not, I may be wrong about the rules. I think there's a lower salary even you pay him, but there's no vet min bonus that you can ignore in terms of cap purposes. So you wouldn't have that ability, you know, cherry to put on top of an offer.
Right.
Let's go back to Prochet though.
Yes.
How can we not talk about Miles Boykin? That's okay. we love tangents. One of the things for Prochet that I think is very important this year, and there are other options. I mean, Tylan Wallace could all of a sudden become a key receiver for the Ravens. They could go to a excessive amount of 13 personnel if that's what they choose to do, because they certainly have the horses for that this year in a 4-to-make-3 tight end situation. I'm not even counting Ricard in there, mm-hmm. you know, with Boyle and as one of those four tight ends with Likely and Kolar and Andrews. They have a lot of 13 options, and that will drive opposing DCs nuts. So it could be that becomes one of their big packages. But assuming they're going with still a fairly typical number of wide receivers on the field, Prochet's got to get a fair number of snaps this year. If he doesn't, he'll have his initial period will effectively, his clock will be almost expired, and his he'll be entering his fourth year with not much of a track record, and he'll be frankly just on the bubble as soon as camp starts.
I have to think that the Ravens' trade of Marquise Brown must suggest that they see something in somebody among Tylan Wallace, Devin Duvernay, James Prochet, and the guys mm-hmm. are different enough that they probably see a little bit of something in each of them. You know, that you're certainly not going to use Tylan Wallace the same way you would James Prochet.
Right.
So that's that's reassuring. And when you look at all of the Instagram highlights and stuff like that that come out where Lamar's running around with his guys on the field and people are working, like Prochet is there. So I think there we can presume a certain amount of trust factor between the quarterback and him. I think you're right. I think he's going to see a lot of snaps probably in as a third wide receiver.
Yeah, it's interesting that the guys who wear the helmet when they practice with Lamar, I really like that.
Yeah.
You know, there's more going on there. They're trying to simulate things. Those are actually receiving skills they're trying to hone by wearing the gear they're going to have to. You always hear that people are not as fast. It's not that as much as being a vision thing. Mm-hmm. I see you making the motion at me. I don't want to steal your thunder on this, but the ability to go over either shoulder with your helmet on, pick up and track the football.
Find
well.
Football, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, because I would imagine the helmet's got to restrict your peripheral vision, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And there's also, this is kind of a stupid thing to say, but even the physical mechanics of turning your head to look for something when there's the weight of a helmet on it, or the friggin' chin bar is going to bump against your shoulder pad. Like, there's different physical mechanics in turning your head to look for the football. And so exactly what you say, if they're wearing it while practicing, while just running routes and practicing with the quarterback, that bespeaks a certain seriousness to me. That's technique work there.
Yeah, absolutely. It takes the entire practice goes from throwing the football around in the backyard kind of manner, which is really more testing Lamar's arm strength and accuracy. And you can still get that out of it. But if you're really testing the receiving skills, then you're getting both sides of the coin there. And I don't know. We don't really see from a lot of these things who's there with them, but we presume that Lamar's quarterback guru may well be there with him. Or
we've seen him in some of the Instagram stuff. We've seen him standing off to the side. Adam Dido. Yep.
That's great to hear. And I would really hope that there's a wide receiver guru with these guys. And it wouldn't be anybody from the Ravens because they're not allowed to, but it could be somebody else who's a broadly known guy. Lamar has been such a North Star for other Ravens players to look at and say, hey, look, this guy went from a guy who was just basically a running quarterback in 2018 to a guy who won the MVP a year later, with 36-6 and, 113 passer rating and whatnot, because he took on positional coaching. I wish people on both sides of the football would be looking at that and really taking advantage of it.
I always wonder, I have wondered if when Harbaugh hired T. Martin and Keith Williams, if one of the things he was doing was taking those guys away from other receivers around
the league. Could be. And they may also have the connections, even though, they're not allowed to work with these guys directly. They probably know four guys who teach receiving schools and one they really love and say, hey, go see this guy during the offseason because he's going to tell you what you need. He's very cheap. We can't pay for it. You'll have to pay for it. But, $25,000 invested in yourself over the course of the summer is going to really pay dividends for you.
Prochet looks to me like he's changed his body a tiny bit from college. He looks a little stringier, more muscularly defined. And I wouldn't be surprised if he could get a smidge faster, obviously not taking, 0.2 off his 40 time or anything like that, but just a smidge quicker in and out of his breaks. And I think we have seen that from receivers who have worked, like Devontae Adams, for example, guys who have worked with Keith Williams or T. Martin. We've seen them get a little more sudden, which may be as much technique as physical change, but that kind of improvement, which really translates to separation.
Yeah, I think when it comes back to how he's going to get separation, I have to go back to the trickeration or the trickery or whatever we want to call it of how he can make that step at the top of the route that makes the other guy do something silly. We saw, I go back to the Colts game in week 5 and Anthony Averett was made look bad by some pretty average Colts receivers. And, what they were doing was pretty simple. They got to the top of the route opposite Averett, who was in off coverage, and they would make one move. Averett would bite on it, and they'd be going the other way. So they really understood how to counter. Prochet's got to know. I'm sure he knows some of this right now, by the way. I'm not saying that he
more
does
than you
none
and I.
Of this. Oh, yeah. I'm not sure. I'm certainly not saying that he knows none of this. But as a less speedy receiver, he knows it's got to be his bread and butter.
Right.
And however good he is at it right now, he probably needs to get better at the NFL level.
Agreed. But he seems to have the appetite for that kind of work.
All right. Well, let's move on and talk about a good
to great
year.
Good to great. Yeah.
Yeah, I did. So in terms of a good season, do you want me to go first, or you want to go first on this?
Why don't you go ahead?
Okay, sure. So to me, a good season would be increasing his targets with only a slight decrease in rate stats. I don't think he can possibly catch 80% of the balls if he's going to catch more targets. And he's not going to go for 10-point yards per target, even if he has, you know, double the number, especially perhaps if he has double the number of targets,
right,
in particular. But I would still say it could be a good year if he played only 20 to 40% of the snaps. If you're under 20%, then I'd say the Ravens haven't really got what they thought they would hope to get in the way you talked about it, that they saw something in these three guys, a little bit in each, expected a bigger role. And if Prochet didn't get to at least in that number, I would think that would not be a good result for the Ravens.
Are you thinking about like the 40 target range maybe for him?
Well, 40 would be doubling it. That's not unreasonable. And that would probably be good if he got that. If he got 38 targets and you know, yeah, he's close in the same rate things and he's playing a decent amount of snaps, I think that'd be fine. One thing about the Ravens offense I always want to be careful is to stay qualitative, because there aren't enough targets to go around for the receivers.
Right, right.
So, you know, that's just the nature of it. And if the Ravens are really playing well on offense and defense, they will do two things. They will run the ball very effectively, play four down football, and beat the opponents silly in the run game. And then on defense, they will be absolutely free to play whatever package they want and dare the other team to run when they have a 2-touchdown lead in the second half. And that is going to be the real fun of the season, by the way. Mark my words right now, the Ravens, when they're ahead by 14 in the second half, are going to be a very fun team to watch in terms of how they destroy opponents defensively.
One of my favorite episodes of Ravens football was that home game in 2019 against the Patriots. I think it was a Monday night game.
Mm-hmm.
And the shots of Tom Brady on the sideline just watching the clock tick while the Ravens offense just kept the ball. And you just see the look of frustration just mounting on his face as he continues not to get the opportunity to get on the field.
Yeah, I don't want to one-up you or anything, but from earlier in that game, one of my favorite sideline shots is Belichick talking to his defense. And the head coach, one of the things is you don't turn your back on the field.
Not
you
usually.
Don't, you don't go over and talk to it, but he dressed down his defense after those first two touchdown drives. He's basically saying, you know, you guys need to pick it up and get us back in this game. And of course they didn't. So how about a great year?
For a good year for Prochet, I think that it's a role kind of thing. If he's the number one, number three receiver, right? He's the number one slot guy, who's not a tight end.
I'm sure.
then that's a fairly high usage, and that's a critical role. That's like a third down role. And so I would expect to see kind of qualitatively somebody who's in sort of a Dennis Pitter role as a non-speedster, chain-moving, reliable target.
He probably gets to 40% of snaps if he has that role as you describe it there. If it's not, you know, Wallace and Yvette and Duvernay and Bateman taking all the snaps, then,
right,
you know, if he's the number one third receiver, he's almost certainly going to get to 40% of snaps.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move on. I've got one more here.
Great season. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Is that his catch rate remains high. And I'm defining high as over 70 plus, but I don't want to really hone it down too much, with greatly increased targets and snaps. And that leads to the Ravens avoiding signing or trading for a veteran free agent wide receiver because they quickly realize their in-house options are good. Now, he's just one of them.
Right.
But that would be really terrific if he could get the Ravens to that point.
Yeah. So for me, the great, like the highest imaginable upside to me for Prochet is if he turns into the Black Steve Largent. And he's an outside receiver, you know, doing the things that, you know, we always said way back in the 80s that, you know, Largent is slow. How the heck does he get open against these defensive backs? He's doing it with precise route running and shiftiness and trickeration in his routes.
Yeah.
So he becomes the number two receiver. And we're looking at, I don't know, 800 yards or something like that.
Well, that would definitely be a great, they'd be doing backflips if they got that, because there's, again, with Bateman and Andrews and Kolar, and you can start to stack the names, there just aren't a lot of yards to go around to fuel that. But that would be great. And
that would be my fantasy stretch target for him, like the outer limit of what I could imagine for him.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, are we ready to move on to Travis Jones here at this point?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Outstanding. So Travis Jones, I think most people know him, but I'll talk a little bit about, you know, what the Ravens have to start with. Very modest quality of college film, really made not apparent who this guy was, I think. I think a lot of people had him as being drafted higher because he'd been the focus of a very bad UConn defense, a guy who was on the field for a lot of snaps, a guy who had shown some pass rush moxie. There was some question of whether or not he'd done that against some weaker opponents, which is really a lot of the question about his tape. You know, was he good? Ideal nose tackle size, got the great length, over 34 inches, weighs 320 pounds. Because he's had some pass rush success already, and we may be mapping things that were done against some lesser opponents, but he has penetrating three tech versatility as well, which is really nice. You got a lot of guys play only nose, especially if they're his size. A guy who can play nose and a three and really has no problem going up against a guard using his athleticism to get by. They're much rarer. And I think the Ravens did get real value drafting him in the third round. I was ecstatic about the pick when it happened. I had a little time to think about it since, and there is a Raven that I think is a pretty good comp for him that we didn't end up being all that happy with. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. In terms of Travis Jones, first of all, how did you feel about the draft pick itself?
So I'm not as into the college evaluation process as you guys were. And by the way, I loved your YouTube videos on day one and day two of the draft. Those were great. I actually had those on the TV with ESPN muted and was listening to you guys talk.
Oh, thanks.
Flashed up. So, so the two things that I noticed right away about the pick were, number one, a lot of people had expressed that they would be happy to get Travis Jones at the pick that instead we took Ojabo.
Mm-hmm.
So getting him around later is clearly a coup. Mm-hmm. Number two, he seemed, you know, looking at him really in depth for the first time after the draft, he seemed like the poor man's Jordan Davis. You know, he's just maybe he's what, 1/14 of a second slower in the 40 than Jordan Davis was. And Jordan Davis wowed the world with that 40 time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you're getting the third round version or the second and a half round version of the first round Jordan Davis at a position that the Ravens have historically, you know, you hope that he grows up to become Haloti Ngata, right? That's a guy that we know how to use, we've seen in this defense.
That would, I mean, Jordan Davis could hope to be Haloti Ngata. Right, Haloti, right. You know, Haloti Ngata was the third best player in that 2006 draft.
Yeah.
Actually, third best or second best. It might have been the second best player to come out of that 2006 draft. I going through a absolutely fantastic looking podcast that is to come that's going to evaluate Ravens drafts on a new basis, but essentially re-ranks the players as they should have been drafted based on their career values. And it looks very good for the Ravens in terms of their history of drafting players. I don't want to give away too much, but that's coming in a couple of weeks, and I hope you guys will keep a lookout for that one. I love the pick, but the one guy that I thought of after the fact, who, boy, there's a lot of similarity here. Unfortunately, isn't Jordan Davis? It's Carl Davis.
And, oh,
you know, yeah. You know, a similar guy who a lot of people thought could have gone at the end of the first round. You know, in when he went, I think he's been in the league now 6 years. So I guess he was in the 2021. He would have been the 2016 draft. Ravens got him in the third round. Davis came to camp and was pissed about it. You know, he basically said, there's no reason on God's earth why, you know, I should have been drafted in the third round. I'm a first round draft pick. And he played okay for 2 years for the Ravens and then was cut in year three, which is a little bit surprising, but they did have some extra depth on the defensive line entering that 2018 season. They didn't have room for him on the roster, and they ended up having to cut him as one of the last guys to go. But if you look at who this guy was in college, same kind of size, weight exactly the same, length was similar, a 1-3 tech guy, came out of college with a rep as being a guy who had a little bit of pass rush mojo, just like Travis Jones does, didn't have quite the same three cones. So not the same kind of slipperiness at the line of scrimmage, and definitely not the same kind of speed, although he's not too far behind. But I, you know, I look at, you know, you want to believe the player you've just drafted is at the top edge of what you have. Right. And I think Ravens fans need to be careful with the Tyler Linderbaum is actually very similar in terms of Garrett Bradbury. In fact, I think if you put their two scouting reports next to each other, a lot of people would mess up who was who without taking the names out. Just look at the scouting reports. You know, very similar in terms of what the problems are and everything. Garrett Bradbury, of course, didn't work out. So, you know, the same thing happens with Carl Davis and Travis Jones. It's not a, it's by no means is he a 100% chance to work out guy. I'm still excited by the value.
So I think one of the things that's maybe undersold about Travis Jones is that he played every damn snap for that defense, which was like 70 snaps a game. And this is not a position that does that typically. So this is a big dude who's making a lot of contact on every play and not getting rotated at all. And Joe Ortiz talked about this on draft weekend or maybe just after that, that if they envision that if they take Travis Jones down to kind of a normal amount of snaps, that he has, you know, more energy per snap and can be more disruptive and doesn't really have to pace himself. Yeah. I think of like a senior guard on a basketball team who just cannot come off the court. And he's not going to challenge every fast break or whatever. You know, he's going to pull back a couple of times. Mm-hmm. You know, Travis Jones in the third quarter, he's going to have to pick his spots because he's still got a quarter and a half of every snap to play when he's at UConn. Here, he's going to be rotated in and out with, you know, Calais Campbell, with Matt Abuike. You know, he's going to have more opportunities to go full out.
Yeah, I agree completely. And that was my biggest thing about Travis Jones prior to the draft. I know Ortiz picked up on it too, but that was my comment right away, is that at 53 snaps per game, he's playing about 70% of the snaps in college, which is ridiculously high. You can't expect a lineman to stay fresh. And by the way, if you want to look back in Ravens history, Haloti Ngata, I believe, four times played 70% of snaps, and Kelly Gregg did it a couple times. Like, nobody has done it in recent years. So Calais Campbell was a guy who, before he came to the Ravens, had played between 77 and 80% of snaps for five consecutive years, but he didn't with the Ravens. The Ravens are a very strict rotational team. They believe in keeping people fresh. And so Hortz's comments are well-placed. It's certainly very historic Ravens that would be the case. I think, you know, regardless of what you're using him for, run defense or pass defense, he's got to be more effective at doing so in fewer snaps. I think that's one of the givens. It's number one in terms of my improvements, is that his best chance is to maintain a high level of effectiveness is to do it in fewer snaps and stay fresher doing it.
Yeah. And so if he's got a little more burst, you know, he showed flashes of pocket pushing and penetration and pass rush ability. If he's got a little more juice on a per snap, then maybe we'll see more of that in the NFL than we did in college, which would be counterintuitive.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the opportunity is there. Also, the positional opportunity is there. I want to get into that a little bit too. He'll play a fair amount of nose tackle in this league because he'll rotate with Pierce some there. I think one of the nice things about getting him on the field and having him active is that there won't be too many games where the Ravens will want to have just Pierce active as their only nose tackle. I think they'll want two guys. So that is a problem with a player like him, is that you're not obviously active every game as a rookie. And that's one of the reasons why the rookies tend to get fewer defensive line snaps for the Ravens than you would have. They really grow into that. Brandon Williams as a rookie didn't have a whole lot of snaps even. So, you know, even your best players really aren't that. But what I wanted to talk about his play at nose tackle is, I think he has the slipperiness and the juice to continue to command doubles. Mm-hmm. Now, let me describe a little bit schematically what I mean by that. It is normal for the one tech to be blocked by both the guard and the center to start with on a pass play, most typically also on a run play, but on a pass play is where this is going to be more effective.
The one tech has lined up in the gap between the guard and center that we're talking about?
Correct. Okay. Yes. I always take that for granted, but I appreciate you bringing that back. So he's up in the guard, but up in that spot between the guard and center. Now, if the center is quick, he gets out there with good reach and it gets maybe a good push from that guard, the guard will leave him set up on the center and immediately look for work. It can go the other direction also, where the guard takes him and the center is free to look for work, pick up a blitz, whatever it might be. But I think it's more common if you're only rushing four, that that guard is then able to come over and make a hellacious bailout block for the tackle. And, you know, I praised people like Ben Cleveland last year, even though his game wasn't perfect by any stretch. He processes very well from center out to be able to look for work that way. So he says, okay, you've got this guy. I've done my necessary jam on this guy's rib. I can feel you've got him. And now he's immediately looking, is it blitz? Okay, I'll help the left tackle. And with Villanueva last year, you know, that was when he was able to do it, it helped a lot because he was giving up, you know, walk back pressure on an awful lot of plays where that could really help. That's one of the things Travis Jones needs to prevent from occurring. Mm-hmm. He needs to be too slippery for that nose for that center to be able to say, yeah, I got him. He needs to be between those guys using that big first step that he has, a lot of explosiveness, to try and get each of them on half a block so neither of them think, yeah, I can give that up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's a situation where it's characteristic of this position, right? Where he's occupying a lot of blockers and gets no stats for it.
No stats, pressures, exactly.
No hits, no sacks. But the guys around him are cleaning up. And that would be, I'm sorry, I feel like I'm skipping into good to great here, but that would be just, you know, perfect.
Well, it's an area that we want to see out of him this year, and it's okay to talk about those in advance. I'm going to add a couple more here, and if you've got any, please jump in. But I want him to increase his strength at the NFL level. And it's not like his strength numbers are necessarily bad, but he didn't bench.
Yeah.
That's an indicator, isn't it, as a guy
that big. But you see the strength on the field. You see him pushing two linemen on running plays. So it's got to be there.
You would hope it is. But, you know, guys like that, always get him into an NFL weight room, get him real grown man strength is something that I always want to see in a young lineman. I think it's important no matter how you know, amazing he is. I don't think he's a Brandon Williams type strength guy coming right into the NFL where he can walk on his hands at his kind of weight. But I think he you know, is intriguing and certainly has the frame for outstanding strength going forward.
He does not go backwards on running plays, at least not a lot in college on tape. And that's nice.
Yeah, that's very important. That's obviously very central to the job. By the way, the same thing applies on the being the one tech on a run play, but your goal is somewhat different. You basically, he has to impact the center in such a way or impact the guard in such a way that the other guy cannot drop off that block doesn't get the go code to go to level two and make a second block that really can cause damage and create big holes. I got one other for him. Well, two others, I guess, for him. One is that I think he provides an awesome potential to pair with Pierce on early downs. And there'd be a couple of gains from that. The first is that you get a one and a three tech who are outstanding run defenders. And even if they try the double-double method that the Ravens often use on the inside, meaning they motion in a tight end to help on a defensive tackle and also double the nose tackle, it really provides a opportunity for the Ravens to get a stonewall run defense again going with those two on early downs. There is an additional dividend that would pay in that I think that would provide, you know, a increased rotational value for Campbell, who could reduce his overall snap count and play on higher leverage snaps as that three or even the nose tackle with some exotic blitz or rush type packages.
Right.
And I expect we'll see a fair amount of that. So, you know, if the Ravens are in this position where they can go in the second half and play whatever defense they want at will, because they've got a 14-point lead and they basically say, I dare you to run the football. You know, they can put Campbell in four outside linebackers, or they can go to a quarter on every down if they want to and just say, let's see if you can beat this. And that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think one of our, preoccupations going into this draft was to this offseason was for the Ravens to find some way to improve their outside pass rush. And we don't have David Ojabo yet, right? Where there's some hope that he'll join the team maybe after October or something like that. But I think Travis Jones potentially improves the outside pass rush by doing, you know, commanding the double teams the way you're talking about, keeping a guard from switching out to help on a tackle. But, mm-hmm. the, and also just the rotational snap benefit for Calais Campbell being fresher, you know, for Madubuike, you know, playing higher, you know, third down snaps and not getting beaten down in the running game. So mm-hmm. I think that this is an underrated addition to the pass rush in a non-statistical kind of role.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's a very good way to put it. I'm ready to talk about what's a good and what's a great. Do you have any other comments about Travis?
I got a couple things. When you mentioned Carl Davis, I went to look up some of Davis's combine numbers. Mm-hmm. And Davis ran 5.07 in the 40. Travis Jones ran 4.92. So Jones was notably faster. That's what, a tenth of a second?
Carl Davis was about a 57th percentile guy, and I think it works out to be an 80-something percentile guy for Travis Jones. So you're getting an explosive, quick guy with Jones.
Yeah, so I think that that's one reason to think that the downside comp to Carl Davis probably or has a good chance of not coming true. The other thing that I thought of that would be a hidden benefit of having Travis Jones in training camp is that all of us are interested in how our undersized center is going to perform against defensive linemen. And so Tyler Lindebaum gets to practice first team snaps. You know, he gets to take them against Pierce. He gets to take them against Travis Jones. He gets to get Calais Campbell rotate on him on passing downs. The quickness of Madubuike. Like, if we're worried about how Lindebaum is going to play on week one, he's going to get a lot of opportunities to work, you know, find out what he needs to work on as training camp progresses.
Yeah. And you're talking in particular in the case of Jones and Campbell, you're talking about very long players. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what Linderbaum's issue may be is guys coming, particularly from three tech. Let's see on our own practice field, how, you know, Campbell crossing the face of a guard and hitting Linderbaum, which, by the way, in terms of looking at film on a recent show with Coach Evans. Mm. You know, what's one of the things we noted?
Sip to Sally, right?
Yes,
sip exactly. To tally,
it's sip to tally.
His stuff is great.
It is. It's a lot of fun. I'd highly recommend this particular episode anyway. And you know, it was a good conversation about that. But one of the things we noticed, Cole Jackson was on the show too, by the way. I just want to point that out. Mm. But the three tech crossing the guard's face was giving him more length issues than anybody who lined up on a one. The ones were having more trouble getting stretched out. Now we're watching a select group of plays and he won some, he lost some, and coach was trying to pick plays for us where he had some wins and losses in this group. So I'm not saying that we're getting the total set there, but it is one thing I really want to keep an eye on is, you know, how's he reacting to a longer player traveling further, who's more able to dictate that first contact against him because of length, and how he can deal with that? The Ravens are going to get an awesome opportunity to see what he can do and to have him try and refine his game against real NFL talent in camp.
Right. So I think that we have a great opportunity for Tyler Lindebaum not to be surprised when week one of the regular season rolls around and he's seeing live fire. So that's a hidden benefit of the Travis Jones selection, and actually something I'm almost more excited about than his actual play on Sundays.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything more on Travis before we go to good and great? Or Jim, you said you had a couple
things.
Okay.
That's it.
All right. So here's my good, and then you adjust it in whatever way you see fit. I'll say be a regular game day activation, which is not a given, but he should get it as long as he and Pierce are the only two nose tackles available. And a frequent pairing with Pierce when the Ravens run base, and he can also replace Pierce as appropriate. But I'm not going to put a lot of pass rush responsibilities in the good level. He's basically, if he's a frequent pairing with Pierce, I'll assume that means he's a useful pairing with Pierce in terms of their ability to stop the run. But I'm not making any specific requirements in terms of his pass rush in the good category.
I agree completely on the game day active, and I wonder if Travis Jones is not going to prove to be a more versatile player than Michael Pierce, and if one of them is going to be inactive, maybe starting from the middle of the season or late in the season, I wonder if it's necessarily going to be Jones who would be inactive.
That's a great point. You know, they're paying Pierce a lot of money, obviously, but if they decide that Jones is a better football player, which, hey, that happens all the time. You know, I have no problem personally if Daniel Falele beats out Morgan Moses, even if we're paying Morgan Moses a bunch of money. Do you?
Right.
Sunk
no,
cost.
It's good news because it's right. It means that Falele has really shown something.
Yeah.
Hopefully it means that.
Yes. Hopefully indeed. But you could well be right. And obviously there's always the chance of an injury where he's going to have to step up into a bigger role. That wouldn't be good for the Ravens, but it might be necessary if that's what he ends up having to do.
Yeah, so my good for Jones would be the regular game day active, preferably every game, and a sack or two.
Okay. I'll go on with my great here, and I'll say he commands additional snaps. I don't want to use an exact number, but there haven't been a lot of defensive tackles or nose tackles who've reached the 40% level as a rookie. It's actually been quite rare. I think Haloti Ngata was even only around 43%, 42, 43% as a rookie in 06. And that, you know, that's
and he was
one of the great ones. Yes.
Yeah.
But more importantly than that, he needs to command those snaps by his level of play and not by the necessity of injury.
Right.
So, you know, it won't be a great year if Michael Pierce gets hurt and he's forced into 43% of the snaps. Like, remember, Ellis was playing a high percentage of the snaps at nose after we had injuries. That's not what we're looking
for.
Not
what we're looking for. Yeah.
And then I would also tack on that he provides some value to the pass rush. I won't define it in terms of number of snaps. I'm looking for him to push the pocket effectively, to be disruptive, to get his hands up, to cause some tip balls that may be intercepted, to do a little bit of everything, maybe fall on an occasional fumble if we have some strip sacks. There's a lot of things he can do without actually being the guy who takes the quarterback down.
Agreed. Yeah. And so for me, the great for him, you know, we did a little more quantitative for Prochet. I think for an interior defensive lineman, I would tend more towards the qualitative. I want to notice him. You know, I want on pass plays, I want to see a guard, you know, being blown up and pushed back into the quarterback's face. I want to see, a quarterback want to try to climb the pocket to get away from Odafe Oweh, and he can't because the pocket's being pushed into his face. So I want to notice him. I'm sorry. A great would be if I'm consistently noticing him and kind of giggling with glee because somebody's on his ass, you know, like a guard's on his butt, a center's on his butt, a quarterback's on his butt.
I love it. I love that description. That's outstanding. And that it's just the kind of qualitative description I like in these things, because it's really just too hard to place exact numbers on things at this point when, you know, particularly for the Ravens offense, you could be very effective in very limited opportunities if you're a receiver, but also in terms of the defense, we don't know who's going to be getting all the glory on this defense. This could be a rush a few, generate a lot of turnovers offense. That's what this, you know, they could be schooled to do. This could be a go crazy like Rex Ryan or Wink did in terms of rushing people from everywhere, including defensive backs, which would be fun also and probably very effective. But I don't think we know yet particularly with the style that McDonald will bring exactly what this defense is going to look like.
Although the addition of Kyle Hamilton is very suggestive. You know, I can see him in a Troy Polamalu role occasionally, creeping up to the line of scrimmage on passing downs and really causing problems for the protection.
Yeah, but it's even more difficult to say then is what you're really saying, because he's a movable chess piece within this thing. They don't need him to play on the back end. Like I've been saying in a lot of shows, that's the good kind of safety versatility is you got two free safeties as opposed to you have four guys who are strong safeties and you can do the best you can with those.
Right.
All right. Jim, outstanding always to talk football with you. I love doing this, even if it's in the middle of the night. We're doing this at almost 1 a.m. on May 28th, so we can kind of timestamp this episode. If anything big happens, there are additional acquisitions that make these predictions not particularly useful anymore.
Well, then we'll just have to talk about them again.
Well, we will. So if we have an acquisition, I'll be sure to give you a call, Jim. And I hope we can get together for other projects this summer. But first of all, tell people one more time where they can reach you.
Well, so I'm on Twitter. You can search for Jim Zipcode or the actual @ is Zip_Jim. And I'm on the RSR forums. And honestly, you can look for me talking college basketball on Testudo Times as well. So,
very cool. All right. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short this summer, I'd love to have you. DMs are always open. Hit me up with your idea We'll talk about it beforehand and get it into something that's fairly narrow. And we can talk about it in about 25 to 30 minutes. That's the ideal kind of a show length, even though we almost always go over. I was just telling Jim before the show, we're probably going to go 25 minutes and we're at 45, but yeah. You know,
which is short for us.
Yes, which is short for us. You get us talking football, you know, there's going to be discussion and tangentiality, but I would really love to hear from you and always interested to talk football with new people. That I haven't met yet. I've had about 5 or 6 new people already on this year, and I've just each and every one has been something new and something I've really appreciated. Jim, thanks again for coming on and being a regular on this show.
Thanks for the invitation. I love it. I'll come back whenever you can stand to have me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.